Translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear friend Nanda Maharaj, in the place where you are living with your friends, is the forest favorable for the animals, the cows? I hope there is no disease or inconvenience. The place must be full of water, grass, and other plants. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. For human happiness, one must care for the animals, especially the cows. Vasudev therefore inquired whether there was a good arrangement for the animals where Nanda Maharaj lived. For the proper pursuit of human happiness, there must be arrangements for the protection of cows. This means that there must be forests and adequate pasturing grounds full of grass and water. If the animals are happy, there will be an ample supply of milk, from which human beings will benefit by deriving many milk products with which to live happily. As enjoined in the Bhagavad Gita, 1844, Krishi Gorakshavanijam Vaishyakarma Svabhavajam. Without giving proper facilities to the animals, how can human society be happy? That people are raising cattle to send to the slaughterhouse is a great sin. By this demoniac enterprise, people are ruining their chance for a truly human life. Because they are not giving any importance to the instructions of Krishna, the advancement of their so-called civilization resembles the crazy efforts of men in a lunatic asylum. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyanati Vrinanda Se Gyanachana Shri. So this is a wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada. And it's one of these verses which we can just actually enjoy, even without trying to extract too many meanings or lessons. Obviously, every verse has so much to offer us in terms of spiritual instruction, challenges to our own spiritual life. But verses like this sometimes can just be pleasantly observed, so that we get a little impression or a feeling of the types of interaction that take place in the spiritual world. So this is a very nice scene that's painted. Nanda Maharaj is being asked by Vasudev, that is the forest favorable? Is the place where you are living pleasant? Are you there with your friends? Are there cows? Are there suitable amenities for the cows? Are there nice grasses for them? Is there water? Are there other plants? And are you free from disease or other inconvenience? So these are some of the typical exchanges that would take place between very intimate persons. Obviously, this is a discussion between Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj. When Nanda Maharaj comes to Mathura to pay his taxes to Kamsa, takes the opportunity to meet Vasudev. Of course, it's only a short time prior to this that Krishna has actually been transferred. And so we are hearing the interaction between, in one sense, two fathers of Krishna. And their first or their major preoccupation appears to be with the cows. And this is exactly what Srila Prabhupada emphasizes here, that a real civilization, a genuine civilization which is sustainable and progressive, actually has cows at its center. According to the Vedic conception, real wealth is described in terms of cows and land. That is actually real wealth. So in today's society, both of those are really seen as just commodities. People fight over land. Cows are there to be used and abused and consumed, just like any other plant or any other animal, according to today's standards. But there is actually a completely different standard of living that is actually possible. Prabhupada really emphasizes here about this real contradiction of a so-called civilization which sends millions and millions of animals, innocent creatures, to the slaughterhouse for no real valid reason. The situation we have today is actually a lot worse than in the past, even on a materialistic level. Because in a materialistic environment, yes, people have eaten meat. People have always eaten meat. The human body is designed to consume both items. And depending on the region that people are born in or live in, they will adopt similar foodstuffs. Now, the difference between today's occupation and the previous years, ages, decades, centuries, is that in the past, people would eat what they needed. And people would consume on a local scale, on a small scale, those items that they needed or felt they wanted. Of course, this is still all ignorance. To actually have a life which is based upon subsistence of flesh is pretty poor by any moral standards. But at least in the past, it was happening on a small scale, in local areas. What you have today is with the whole industrial assistance to this process of killing, is you have a whole mechanized process and a whole agenda behind it, which results in millions and millions and billions of animals being slaughtered every year. Then the whole game of economics comes into play. And then prices go up. And then to maintain high prices, valid foodstuffs are dumped or binned. This is standard practice in today's culture. So we can say that things are degrading, even materially. And this very idea that we should exploit an animal while they're alive, exploit it to the maximum, and then send it to the slaughterhouse, is an idea which is actually unappealing to most intelligently thinking people. Most children, when they first understand that actually the burger they've just eaten was actually an animal, they actually immediately think, oh, they almost feel some revulsion towards it, naturally. But then obviously as the modern education system takes over and people grow up, they start to learn that this is just the way it is. Hamburgers grow on trees. There was one McDonald's advert which was like that. It depicted hamburgers just growing in a field. So this is the impression that people take away with them. And most people don't really question things. Because after all, things just land on your plate. Your parents provide when you're at home, at school. School dinners are served. And most people don't really invest too much of their thinking power into what actually they're eating. Because they have other pressing matters on their mind. So it is a shame that that is the way society is constructed. But here we have a description of a society which doesn't need to function in that way. Today's society is, as Prabhupada calls it, centered around demoniac enterprise. And as a result of this, people are ruining their chance for a truly human life. So there clearly is there's almost a diametric opposite in terms of views of people in general and of devotees who would write this kind of a prose. So obviously for some people, obviously for those in modern culture, they're also thinking that they're living happy, healthy, fulfilling human lives. And we are also saying we are also living human lives. But there has to be a difference, and it has to come down to what we define as a human life. Now, for most people, human life, or a life which is fulfilling and worth living, is fully centered around sense gratification. So satisfying the senses by providing numerous objects and situations and facilities is generally the operating principle in the world at large. Whichever society we go to, whichever country, whichever faith, even for members of different faiths, underlying it, this is the operating principle. And so people want to enjoy as much as possible. People develop different tastes according to the objects and according to the sense organs that we have. And then people develop specific likes, specific dislikes. And then they conduct their lives trying to satisfy these desires, which they are now feeding again and again. So it's a series of actions that people take, which is based upon being able to enjoy whatever I like without any kind of restriction. In the nature of freedom, we should be able to do whatever we like without restriction. And so this is one factor which people used to distinguish between repressive regimes and perhaps free societies, or so-called free societies. But there is one overwhelming problem with all of this. It's that the decisions that people make, thinking themselves to be free, are actually decisions which arise because of the combination of the mind, the intelligence, a person's predisposition in terms of karma, and then the three modes of nature. So people are very, very focused, very, very fixed and concerned about doing what I want to do. But because they've completely mixed up what I is, and the thoughts that come into people's heads are hardly respectable or of any substance in a grand philosophical sense, they are actually slaves. Far from being free and far from making a conscious decision to do something, their decisions are all dovetailed or are all guided and influenced, and in some cases there's strong compulsion there from their previous activities and karma. They're simply going along the dictates of the mind in conjunction with the modes of nature. And that is a very fickle basis for life. It is actually not very respectable. This is the same problem that Ravana had. Although Ravana had access to so much wealth, so much beauty, everything, he couldn't control his senses. So there was nothing that this world could provide that would ever make him happy, because his senses were outside of his control. Now, of course, depending on how weak our intelligence is, the mind naturally just absorbs the dictates of the senses. The senses say, oh, that tastes nice. So the mind develops a whole regime or a whole plan in conjunction with the intelligence to try to supply more of that substance. And it's the same for any of the other senses of the body. So this is the senses dictating to the mind and the intelligence being a willing cooperating partner in the misled directions of the mind. So that is normal material life. Unfortunately, it is not very progressive. As Gita very clearly explains that when one starts to contemplate the objects of the senses, one develops attachment to them. From attachment, anger arises, illusion, one falls down, intelligence is bewildered, one falls down again into the material pool. So that's the consequence if we go down this path of allowing the senses and the object of the senses to govern our destiny. It's a big problem. It should be the other way around, where actually the intelligence is spiritualized. It receives instructions from authorized, advanced persons and from the supersoul. And then that intelligence acts to control the mind, acts to regulate the mind's demands. And then the mind acts as a friend, hopefully, if we get to that stage, as the Gita describes. The mind can be the greatest enemy of someone, or it can be the greatest of friends. So if the mind is actually situated in a cooperative way, then the mind will regulate the senses. And that is actually a more coherent or a more respectable way to live, because then our actions are principled. There is less room there for the modes of nature to take predominance, because the job of the intelligence is to regulate that. And so if our intelligence is coming from good sources, from spiritual sources, from spiritually advanced persons, we have the fuel with which to regulate the mind. Otherwise, we have a big problem. Because as the Gita explains, when we hang around in this material world for too long, we are subjected to lust. And lust resides particularly in three places in the body. Senses, the mind, and the intelligence. These are all the sitting places of lust, as the Gita describes. So what happens after a long journey in this world is that even our intelligence becomes completely polluted. that deep desire to keep enjoying and enjoying and enjoying unlimitedly becomes so worked into every aspect of our being that we simply stop questioning and we simply give into it and we simply conduct a life being led here or there, this way, that way, simply as if we're in the middle of a sea and we're tossed around by the waves. We actually have very little control. Yet within that, we develop small areas. We develop small strategies. We develop little plans for ourselves. We attempt to try to add some order to this chaos that we are completely out of, that we have no control over. So we create little small areas within which we start to enact things. We make plans to build a building. We make plans to construct a city. We make plans to construct a theme park or start a new business, a new enterprise. So many people come up with so many entrepreneurial activities. And they, within the limits of what they have to control, they act as the controller. Well, of course, this is the purpose of this material world, to facilitate our desire to be controllers. After all, we've come here because we didn't like the idea that Krishna was the controller. We didn't like the idea that actually I can be happy or I can be extremely happy simply if I try to satisfy Krishna's senses. We thought, what would happen if I tried to satisfy my own senses? It seems to be a more direct thing to do. Why go through this roundabout method? I satisfy Krishna's senses, then Krishna satisfies my senses. It seems a bit torturous. Why not remove one link from the chain? But we forgot, we made another big mistake. We actually forgot that the only thing that can actually satisfy us is something in connection with Krishna. So just as we try to satisfy the senses of the Lord actually is the only one who can give us full spiritual satisfaction. There is nothing else that can do it, because the Lord is the only person who knows us completely. So before we try to please someone, we always try to find out what the person likes, what they dislike, what things do they like doing, what they don't like doing. That's the basis of any relationship. So in a material context, we do that according to the different modes that the person is under the influence of. So we do that in some small way, but in a spiritual sense, just imagine, we are by our very nature, we are small fragmental parts and parcels of Krishna, the Supreme Whole. So we are of the same substance. So there's nothing material that is actually going to be able to satisfy us ultimately. Only the Supreme Spiritual Whole can do that. So it's actually very simple and a very coherent philosophy. But sadly, the longer we hang around in this material world, the more complicated our understanding becomes. So many more factors arise. And then the levels of detail that we have to go into also multiply. Shrota Vyadini Rajendra, Nirnam Santi Sahasrashah. This is a description of human society. That in human society, there are hundreds and thousands of subject matters which people contemplate. And there is no end. If we go to any library, there will be bookshelves and bookshelves full of topics. Topics to meditate on, topics to discuss, topics to enjoy. Some topics we will dislike. That is our right. And that is our life. We choose those areas, we choose those circumstances, we choose those facilities, people, situations, countries, climates that actually we feel we can fit into, or that we feel we can achieve whatever objectives we've come up with. So human society has a big problem, as Prabhupada so eloquently described. He stated that human society has lost its brain. If we simply do what the senses, the body, the mind, the subtle body dictates, in absence of any realized direction, we simply make a mess of everything. And this is Prabhupada's conclusion. He says, because they are not giving any importance to the instructions of Krishna, the advancement of their so-called civilization resembles the crazy efforts of men in a lunatic asylum. Now that's really quite heavy, but it's really accurate, because if you have a group of people whose direction is not Krishna, who do not take their intelligence or their direction from authorized, realized sources, it is one person's interaction with the modes and another person's interaction with the modes and another's. And if you expand that to hundreds and thousands, you have a collective drive, which is kind of the sum total of everyone's different desires and methods of achieving sense gratification. And that leads to a society where sense gratification operates. And decisions are made with this as the primary principle. But if we simply read carefully through the Bhagavatam, that itself is very much condemned by saintly persons. Lord Rishabdev, when he gives his instructions, he says, Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yad indriya pritaya apranoti na sadhu manye yata atmanoyam asan apiklesha ashadeha. He explains that every human being is suffering in this world, and they have this body which gives rise to so many kleshas, so many miseries. Now the living entity has adopted this body due to sense gratification. That is the simple goal. That is the simple source factor in us developing this body, to facilitate sense gratification. And it is a fact that when one engages in sense gratification, and when sense gratification becomes the object of one's life, one engages in sinful activities. This is perhaps the most sobering part of sense gratification, because sense gratification is something that's inherently part of us since we're born. Naturally, the instincts, the senses, they drive us to behave in a certain way. And as Prabhupada also admits, he says, yes, the senses do need some satisfaction. The tongue does need to be satisfied. Our mind does need some satisfaction. The organs of our body do need satisfaction. But the problem is that a life based around sense gratification naturally causes one to engage in sinful activities. This is what Lord Rishabdev explains. And this is the part that is so dangerous. Far from the innocent aspect of sense gratification, where it leads is the real problem. Because we dovetail our lives around that desire. And without question, it leads to some form of sinful activity. This verse is speaking about cows, and perhaps in general about animals and exploiting animals. And this is all coming from the desire of the tongue, the sense gratification desires of the tongue. The idea that the tongue needs tasty, palatable flesh in order to survive. And simply when one is totally preoccupied and addicted to that, they have to fulfill that somehow. So then they naturally put aside all the blocks and obstacles that we build in terms of basic morals. The idea that, okay, this is an animal, it has its own life, this is also a creature of God. We're all sons and daughters of God ultimately, why not the animal? Yes, the animal is also part of God, one of its dear creations. So in that sense, it's like family. But my tongue demands something. My tongue demands some taste. Therefore, I must immediately satisfy the tongue. And who cares for the rights of the animal? So you can apply this to all different areas. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Shri Shri Gaunitai ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki. Yad indriya pritaya aprinoti. Indriya pritaya. To please the senses, we engage in sinful acts. And therefore, we have a civilization where the extent of sinful acts humanity engages in can't really even be measured. And it's such a contradictory system. Because on the one hand, we have large-scale propaganda that the environment is being destroyed. CO2 emissions are going up. The planet is heating up. There is inequality everywhere. The coffee growers somewhere in the hot country need to be paid a living wage. So people come up with all these little descriptions of problems that are existing in the world. And some people, out of philanthropy, develop a whole life program to try to eradicate these problems. But actually the whole thing is very foolish. Because people have missed, again, one fundamental point. Again, due to lack of giving any importance to the instructions of Krishna. They have completely omitted the fact that it is their endless desire to consume more and more that is the direct cause of all of these factors. Now, this is extremely unfashionable to say, especially in society at large. Why? Because the whole economic system, the whole political system, any systems that provide some measure of stability in this world are dependent upon the consumption and the mass consumption and the ever-increasing consumption of humans. After all, that's what a growing economy means. And if anyone says anything against a growing economy, well, they'll be shot down. But economic growth, the modern economics, relies upon ever-increasing consumption from people. And we can all see where that's going. Of course, if we want to consume the resources of Mother Nature, we are going to cause environmental damage on an ever-increasing scale. It shouldn't be of any surprise to anyone. It's if you do A, you will get the result B. If you extract more and more from Mother Earth, of course it's all going to end up in the ocean when we dispose of it, when we dispose of the products that we've manufactured it into. So these types of solutions, they all come within the sphere of crazy efforts of men in a lunatic asylum. In the lunatic asylum, you have one group of people who cause chaos, havoc, mayhem. And they're not thinking what they're doing. So this is consumers. We have all developed and we have all humbly submitted ourselves to this mantra, consume more, consume more. And because we've done that, there is another group, also within the lunatic asylum, who are then thinking, okay, you've consumed a lot, now you're about to discharge all that. Obviously, everything we take has to be released somehow. Even biologically, that's a fact. But in terms of material industry, anything we take is going to be waste products, eventually. Nothing lasts forever. So then another group of crazy people say, okay, let's try to eradicate this. And we'll do this by developing an even more complex type of plastic, one which biodegrades into nothing. We'll create methods by which we'll extract all the CO2 from the air and we'll trap it underground. We'll sequester. We'll do so many things. If you simply look at the different schemes in progress at the moment, being discussed at different levels, there's no end to it. And these efforts are good. They're good from a certain perspective, from a certain limited perspective. They're good from the perspective of, I wish to continue my regime of sense gratification, and here are a few problems, and I have to somehow deal with the problems. At least people are thinking of how I can undo some of the problems I've caused. That's good. We don't want to discourage that too much. But we do want to say that in an ultimate level, it is no good applying piecemeal solutions like this. The very consciousness of greed that is causing us to consume more and more, unrestrictedly supply objects to the senses, ultimately under the control of the modes of nature, and nothing to do with progressive life, even human life, not to speak of spiritual life, such a regime is never going to provide a complete fix. Any fix itself is going to create another problem. The root cause is that as humans, we have to learn to be satisfied with the necessities of life. And this is a challenge for everyone, including devotees. It is a challenge especially for devotees to demonstrate that we can actually live a life where we accept the minimum. We don't need excessive anything. We don't need the excessive products of industry. We need food, clothing, shelter. We need those things as a basic, as basics. As Prahlad Maharaj says, one should act to maintain the body and mind. the body and soul together. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Narad Muni also corroborates this point. This should be the basic operating principle for society, not sense gratification. We should do the minimum needed to keep body and soul together so that our human energy, our tremendous potency, is actually exercised in coming closer to God. Because that is not an easy job either. There is a great deal of work, Prabhupada says, to realize the absolute truth. The actual job of realizing the absolute truth is a full-time occupation. It's not something that can be done as a side activity. We have a 12-hour program of sense gratification, and then we engage in a 1 or 2 hour program of coming closer to Krishna. It has to be a more wholesome attitude. So the wholesome attitude can, first of all, be applied to ourselves. And then hopefully as we start to imbibe these qualities and we actually start to live these attributes, we will hopefully be able to encourage society through example that there are alternative lifestyles that are possible. There is a lifestyle where you can have nice grass, nice water, lakes, beautiful cows who give nice products. So many wonderful milk products can be produced. There can be so many nice jewels, as Prabhupada writes in Canto 1, in the hills and the seas, there are jewels and minerals. Everything is provided by the Lord. As humans, we only have to take what we need and use it to actually progress our spiritual life. So it's one of those things where we can meditate on and accept that this is the picture of the spiritual world. Natural, simple lifestyle where the only focus is the worship of Krishna. And our needs are taken care of by this simple life. So I'll stop there. I don't know if there are any questions, comments.